Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star one on your phone to ask a question. I would like to inform all parties that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Dave Prosper. Thank you. You may begin.
Hi there. Thank you. And it's hi there, everyone. So welcome to the Night Sky Network telecom. And if this is your first teleconference with us, welcome. And it's a very simple format. Just follow along with the slides with our speaker, who will be on shortly. And we'll also have time for a brief question and answer period at the end of the talk, as well as an opportunity to pick a prize or win a prize. We have slides in both PDF and PowerPoint formats for folks at our resource page, which you can find, again, in case you don't have them in front of you, at the following link, bit.ly/NSNMAVAN, or bit.ly/NSNMAVAN. And also, at the end of our talk, we have a special prize, which is the Skywatchers kit from the Astronomical Society of the Pacific, which is designed for the novice. This kit has everything you need to get started as a beginning Skywatcher. So everyone here on this call may very well know someone new to their clubs who could use these goodies. We may want them yourself. The kit includes an autographed copy of the Total Skywatchers Manual by the authors, myself, Dave Prosper, my boss, Vivian White, and our boss and executive director, Linda Shore. And we also throw in a Miller Planisphere, which we'll set for your latitude, an ASP Red Light Observer's Pen, an ASP Stainless Steel Travel Mug, and an ASP Tote Bag to hold it all together. And you'll get all the educational literature describing the astronomy ideas featured on the items. And now we just have a brief minute for some Night Sky Network news. Our annual outreach award pins are ready to order by your club coordinators, as long as your club's qualified by hosting four or more public events during the course of this past year and having logged them to the site. We are featuring another Mars mission in addition to this one this year. We have the 2016 Mars InSight mission by NASA, which will be traveling to Mars to check its temperature and pulse, so to speak, in order to find out the internals of Mars versus the very exterior of Mars that we will be discussing tonight. You can find the details in our latest newsletter or on the Night Sky Network site once you log in with your club coordinator account, and all the details are there. And, of course, again, just to log your events, it's another reminder this year to qualify your club for the next round of toolkits and prizes and outreach handouts, because we have new free handouts from NASA available to coordinators of active clubs. If you do not see handouts available for your club, make sure that you have entered at least two events in the past several months to your club's calendar and log the results to keep your club active in Night Sky Network outreach. And one more thing for those of you on the latest version of Windows, we are working on the bugs that have been reported when viewing our site's event calendar with Microsoft Edge and Internet Explorer. And it's kind of a tricky bug, and we're hoping to have a fix soon, but as the holidays are panning out and everything else, we may not have it ready in time for the new year. But not to worry, if you experience these issues, you can view the site in other free web browsers such as Safari, Google Chrome, or Firefox, and we'll have more concrete news after the new year tied in with a special announcement. And what is that special big announcement? We can't say yet, but stay tuned. It's going to be good. Hang in there. And if you have problems entering your sites, your events or whatever due to these problems, just message us at the Night Sky Network at nightskyinfo@astrosociety.org, and we can work something out. And with all that said and done, it's my great pleasure to introduce our speaker, live from the 2015 meeting of the AGU and fresh from his poster presentation, Dr. Matt Fillingham. We are very excited to share with you some of the most recent discoveries made by the MAVEN spacecraft currently in kind of wildly orbiting Mars. The MAVEN mission was launched in 2013 and began its orbital science mission around Mars in 2014, to investigate the mystery of Mars's vanishing atmosphere. 1 year after beginning its science mission, MAVEN has begun to unravel the billion-year-old mystery of how Mars lost most of its air and what is happening to its remaining atmosphere. Matt Fillingham has been a research scientist at the Space Sciences Laboratory at the University of California, Berkeley, since 2002. And prior to that, he received his Ph.D. in geophysics from the University of Washington in Seattle, and both his B.S. and M.S. in space sciences from the Florida Institute of Technology in Melbourne, Florida. His current research focuses on the magnetic fields and tenuous ionized gas, which you may call plasma, surrounding the Earth, the Moon, and Mars. He has also been the astronomy instructor at Berkeley City College since 2008, and was actually my professor for space weather many years ago. Not that many, since 2008. And so, Dr. Fillingham, thank you so much for taking the time out of the very, very busy festivities today. And if your voice is already not exhausted enough, would you like to begin?
Yes. Thank you, Dave. That was a glowing introduction. I appreciate that very much. So as David said, I am at the 2015 AGU, that's the American Geophysical Union Conference in San Francisco, where we have somewhere around 20,000 Earth and space scientists get together and talk about their recent research. And so yesterday and today there were a couple sessions on the newest results from the MAVEN mission to Mars. So I'd like to talk a little bit about those today and tell you, keep you updated on what MAVEN's found so far and all the neat stuff. And so as David said, I'm a research scientist at the Space Sciences Laboratory at UC Berkeley, but as the slides say, so I'm on slide one here. This presentation was mostly put together by Bruce Tecosky. So he's the principal investigator of the MAVEN mission, and he's at the Laboratory for Atmospheric and Space Physics at the University of Colorado in Boulder, Colorado. And so he's in charge of the entire mission, and so I graciously borrowed these slides from him and modified them a little bit. So there's some good stuff here. So we can move to, to slide two to try and motivate what's the point, really. And so one of the big questions that we have about Mars is it appears as though Mars has all of the requirements, as far as we know, for life to exist. So at Earth, wherever we find liquid water, we find life. And wherever the chemical elements are present, so you need things like potassium and sodium and carbon and oxygen and all that stuff, we find life. And also you use some source of energy, so either sunlight, which plants use, or even, in the deep sea at hydrothermal vents, you have all this hot water coming out with lots of hydrogen sulfide, also an excellent source of energy for life to exist. And so all these conditions exist at Earth, lots of life at Earth, and we think all of these conditions existed at one point on Mars. And so the big question is, did Mars ever have life? Well, it's hard to look for life itself. We can look for the evidence of conditions appropriate for life. And so we want to look for evidence of life interacting with the planetary environment, or just in general the habitability of Mars. And were all the conditions there present at the same time for long enough for us to think life may have arose there? We don't know. So to do that, moving on to slide three, one of the big questions about Mars, we look at Mars, we see a lot of evidence for liquid water on the surface. So we see things like ancient river channels. When we look at the chemistry, we also see rocks that appear to have formed in the presence of water. And so currently today, water can't exist on Mars. It's much too cold, and also the atmosphere is much too thin. So it's about 100 times thinner than Earth's atmosphere. So if you have any liquid water on the surface of Mars, it will immediately evaporate and turn into gas. The pressures are just too low. And so we feel it's evidence for liquid water, but it can't exist now. So that tells us in the past, the atmosphere must have been different. It must have been much thicker and presumably much warmer than we see today. And so somehow Mars must have lost a significant portion of its atmosphere. And so there's two ways atmosphere can go. It can go up, out into space. And so previous spacecraft, so Mars Express is a European spacecraft orbiting Mars. It's still actively orbiting. But it has found some evidence of gas atoms and molecules just floating off into space, being stripped away. But atmosphere can also go down into the crust and the rocks. And so at Earth, we see a lot of this. So there's a lot of what we call carbonate rocks at Earth. And those are created by carbon dioxide dissolving in liquid water and that reacting with some of the silicate surface rocks to form what we call carbonates. And so we see some evidence of that at Mars, some carbonate rocks in the meteorites, so we can see them from orbit and look at the composition. But it turns out there's not nearly enough carbonate rocks in the crust of Mars to explain where the atmosphere of Mars went. So we think that predominantly most of it was lost to space rather than went down into the surface. And so there's lots of ways that Mars can lose an atmosphere. And so the MAVEN mission, which as David said, launched about 2 years ago, has been orbiting Mars for about a little over a year, is trying to investigate the different ways that atmosphere can be lost from Mars. And so on slide 4, it tries to illustrate some of these ways atmosphere can escape. So we tried to color code this. So in blue, we're looking at the neutral part of Mars's atmosphere. And in red, we're looking at the ionized part of Mars's atmosphere. So you can have a neutral gas surrounding the planet, and sunlight will hit the neutral gas, and it will start ionizing some of those molecules or atoms. And as soon as you create an ion, ions respond to electric and magnetic fields. Neutral atoms really don't care about electric and magnetic fields, but ions do. And so once you create an ion, then it responds to the electric and magnetic fields that are present in the solar wind. So it's a constant stream of particles and magnetic field, electric field coming off the sun. So if you have a neutral atmosphere, it can slowly escape space. So this idea of genes escape, which basically says your atmosphere has a certain temperature. Some of those molecules and atoms, you know, go in at a particular speed determined by the temperature, and some of those will have a speed that exceed the escape velocity of the planet. They can just fly out into space. They escape the gravity of Mars. And so you can slowly lose an atmosphere that way, particularly for a planet like Mars, which is about half the size of Earth and about 10% the mass of the Earth. So I think the escape velocity is something, you know, less than half of Earth's escape velocity, something like 35-40% of Earth's escape velocity. So atoms have an easier time escaping from Mars's gravity. So you can also have some interesting cases of chemistry, where chemistry can do things. So you have what we call photochemical escape, where you have chemical reactions, and the products of the reactions have enough energy, again, to escape from the gravity of Mars. And we think that that's an important process. You can also have what we call escaping sputtered neutrals. So there you have an ion coming in from the solar wind. It hits a neutral atmospheric atom or molecule, gives that atom or molecule enough energy, and it goes flying off out into space. So all you have to do for the neutral is give it enough energy to escape from the gravity of Mars, and it's gone. For charged particles, it's actually a little bit easier. All I have to do for a charged particle is create it. And then it magically all of a sudden sees the electric and magnetic field from the solar wind and is carried away by the solar wind, moving at about 400 kilometers per second. That's like a million miles an hour or so. And so if you have a neutral atom that's ionized by the sunlight, by ultraviolet light from the sun, it gets immediately carried away by the solar wind and dragged away. And so those are what we call pickup ions. So you have this neutral atmosphere surrounding Mars. If you ionize one of those neutral atmospheres, then it starts to get carried away, picked up by the solar wind and carried out. And you can also have other interesting things happen. So the magnetic field of Mars is fascinating. I mean, it's very different from Earth. Earth has this global magnetic field that covers the entire planet. At Mars, you have these little patches of magnetic field where just some of the rocks are magnetized. And so you have a different configuration. And so once you have ions, they can move along these magnetic field lines, and sometimes they can just flow out into space along the magnetic field lines that go vertically up from the surface, or you can have a big blob of plasma that gets carried away as magnetic field configuration changes. So lots of interesting things, lots of different ways that Mars moves an atmosphere. And so what MAVEN's trying to do is measure the sun, because it's one of the main drivers. Because you have the light from the sun, the magnetic field from the sun, the solar wind from the sun, all the particles coming, and how the upper atmosphere of Mars responds to changes in the drivers from the sun, and how much of that leads to ions or neutrals escaping from Mars. And so what we want to do is understand how that occurs now, and then we can go back in time, go back 4.6 billion years, and figure out, well, what was Mars' atmosphere like a long time ago? And what was Mars' atmosphere like when it formed? And can that explain, you know, all these features that look like liquid water on the surface, or form by liquid water? And so we want to find out how it's escaping now, but then also look back in time and see what was Mars like in the past. So next slide. Slide 5 is a picture of MAVEN and illustrates the instruments, the science instruments that are on the spacecraft. And so there's a group of instruments that look at the sun and the solar winds and solar storms, so how the solar wind changes with time, looking at energetic particles, so both electrons and ions, and also looking at the ultraviolet light, extreme ultraviolet light, which is good at ionizing the upper atmosphere, the EUV. There's also a group of instruments that look at the ions, the upper layer of Mars' atmosphere is ionized, so the ionosphere around Mars, and also the magnetic field around Mars. So that's the what we call the MAG instrument there in the red box. And also the LPW, which is looking at the electric fields and the electric waves that are around Mars. And so seeing how the ionosphere of Mars reacts to changes in the sun. And then finally, in sort of the bluish box, there are the remote sensing instrument and also the in-situ measurements that look at ions and neutrals. And so IUVS looks at the ultraviolet light coming from Mars' atmosphere. So you have chemistry in Mars' atmosphere, and that some of those chemical reactions will produce ultraviolet light, and we can measure different neutral species, different ion species, based on the light they emit. And also NGEMS, which measures both the neutral gas and the ion. But also gives us the composition, so we can know what the atmosphere is made of, and what the different atmospheric constituents are, both neutral and ion. So there's a lot of good information out of that. Okay, so just a brief overview on slide 6 of the overall mission. So as David said, launched in 2013, reached Mars in 2014. And so we have 1 year of science observations orbiting Mars, taking data. And so there's an illustration of the orbit in the upper left. And so it goes pretty high altitude, a couple thousand kilometers above Mars' surface. But at closest approach, it's basically, 150 miles above the surface. So it samples a large portion of the atmosphere and ionosphere every orbit. So each orbit takes about 6 hours. So every 6 hours, you're measuring what the atmosphere is doing, but you're also measuring what the solar wind is doing. So when you're closest to Mars, you measure the atmosphere. When you're far from Mars, you can measure the solar wind. And so you get two-point measurements to figure out how one affects the other. Let's see, in the bottom left, or bottom right, sorry, gives the altitude that MAVEN gets closest to Mars. And this is kind of interesting because the bottom dashed line is the homopause. And that basically defines where the atmosphere is well mixed. So below the homopause, you have lots of winds and turbulence, and you find everything is very well mixed together, all the different carbon dioxide, oxygen, everything's all mixed up. Once you get above that, we're in what we call a diffusion region. So in that case, heavier molecules stay low, lighter molecules rise higher. And so you have a difference in composition just based on the weight of the molecules or atom. And then somewhere around 200 kilometers, you have what we call the exobase. And above the exobase, things get above the exobase, then they have a good chance of escaping Mars. Because the exobase is defined as where, if you're above that, then you don't collide with your neighbors. Collisions are very rare. So you just, you kick it out there, it just flies off into space forever and doesn't hit anything. Below that, it has a greater probability of bumping into a neighbor and maybe going back down rather than going up. And that's sort of the collisional boundary. So above that, things escape. Below that, things don't. And so we really want to sample that exobase, get above and below, and see how things are responding. So that MAVEN's orbit was designed to cross that boundary, every orbit, to see how what's escaping and what isn't escaping. Another important point on slide 7 is the solar cycle. So hopefully we all know the sun varies on an 11-year cycle. The number of sunspots will increase and decrease, increase, decrease. That's related to the sun's magnetic field. And so MAVEN's mission, so right now, is in the declining phase of the solar cycle 24, when you start doing measurements. And that's interesting because the maximum in sunspots occurs at the maximum of the solar cycle. But actually the maximum in solar flares, so energetic events from the sun, actually occurs on the declining phase of the solar cycle. So right now, we expect to see a lot more things like solar flares and coronal mass ejections blowing a bunch of material out into space that may impact Mars. So this is a really interesting time to be studying how the sun interacts with Mars because things could get much more dynamic in the coming year or two. Okay, so what are some of the things MAVEN has discovered so far? Starting at slide eight. So a complete total coincidence that we were very happy about. So MAVEN reached Mars in September of last year. And in October of last year, comet Siding Springs went past Mars. Actually, pretty darn close to Mars in the whole scheme of things. Close enough that the coma of comet Siding Springs basically interacted with the upper atmosphere of Mars. I think the comet was within 100,000 kilometers of Mars. So something we've never seen at Earth, the closest approach of a comet to a planetary body that we've ever seen, where there wasn't a collision. I guess Comet Shoemaker and I, that was the closest approach. That's where the comet hit Jupiter. But this was the closest without hitting approach, I guess, we've ever seen. And so what happened is, we saw a lot of dust from the comet entering Mars's atmosphere, and it's probably a spectacular meteor shower if you were sitting on Mars, and all those little pieces of dust vaporized and ionized. And so from the remote sensing instrument, IUVS, was able to look at the ultraviolet light emitted by those ions, and was able to see a big change in the ultraviolet emission. So let's see, in the upper left, in blue, we see some of the first data from IUVS at Mars. And so you see, as a function of wavelength and brightness, so we see a lot of emission lines and things like carbon dioxide and oxygen and nitrogen, stuff that's in Mars' atmosphere. And then in red is the emission that was seen after the comet passed. And so you see these huge spikes. And a lot of that is things like magnesium and iron and titanium. So things that aren't commonly in the atmosphere of Mars, but are commonly in cometary dust. And so this was basically the first time we had seen emissions from cometary dust in another planet's atmosphere. So that was really, really exciting, and it was like, oh, wow, this is great. And so there were a lot of good stuff came out of that. So that was some of the very first science results from MAVEN, just a month after it got to orbit on Mars. Let's see, on slide 9, so related to that, but slightly different, was also a long-lived metallic ion. So comet Titan Springs flew by, and we saw these metallic ions, and they were pretty high in altitude, what, 180 kilometers or so, 150 kilometers above the surface. And then sometime later, a few months later, we had MAVEN orbiting Mars. Its closest approach got closer to Mars. So it sampled deeper in the atmosphere. And we had the neutral gas and ion mass spectrometer that was able to measure the composition, found some interesting ions there. So in situ, directly measuring, not the emissions, but actually measuring these ions. It again found things like iron and magnesium. And there's actually a second instrument called STATIC, which also measures ions, but not only composition, but also energy. And it also measured things that look like iron ions in the atmosphere. And what's interesting is that these were, you know, every orbit where MAVEN got that low, these things were detected. So we don't think they're related to the comet that passed by in October. This is several months later, but we think this is basically a meteor layer that's always present at Mars. So we call it the long-lived metallic ion layer. We see the same thing at Earth. You know, Earth is constantly bombarded by little meteoroids, and they vaporize from little sporadic meteors. And so there's always these iron, magnesium ions in Earth's atmosphere. It was the first time they were directly measured in another planet's atmosphere. So another first result, first detection from MAVEN. That was also really cool, really, really interesting. Okay, slide 10. This one is also, well, I think all these things are cool. But another amazing thing related to dust around Mars. So there is the electric field instrument called LPW, stands for Langmuir Wave Probe, so LWP. And so it measures electric fields around Mars, electric field waves. And so what's interesting is you have a piece of dust hit the spacecraft. It's usually going pretty fast. It creates a little blob of ions, and we can see that in the electric field signature. And so we've measured this in the lab. We can see it in orbit. Other spacecraft have seen this orbiting the sun, orbiting other planets. We see dust all over the place. And this is a very well-known signal in electric field that you see when dust impacts a satellite. And so we saw these signals also on MAVEN. We're able to map out, well, when do we see these dust impacts? And basically, we see them everywhere. So that tells us there's sort of this dust cloud that surrounds Mars, which is not unexpected. I mean, we have the same thing around Earth. So just in the ecliptic plane, you have asteroids, meteoroids constantly bumping each other, grinding up. There's lots of dust in the ecliptic plane. So we see lots of dust around Earth. But this is the first detection, again, of seeing this dust around Mars. So again, a new discovery made by MAVEN. Okay. Oh, so one of my favorites. They're all my favorites, but it's actually really, really one of my favorites. Is Aurora. So one of the things I like to study at both Earth and Mars is the Aurora. And so at Mars, previously, from Mars Express, which is a mission that's been at Mars for several years, it has detected very small, very localized aurora. So northern lights at Earth, but at Mars it's a little different because magnetic field is very different. It's not like northern lights, or I don't know what you call them, equatorial lights or some such. It's very localized and very specific locations in Mars' atmosphere. So what MAVEN saw is actually the opposite. It saw a very diffuse, very non-localized emission in the ultraviolet light. And so it appears as though the entire northern hemisphere of Mars was glowing. And so if you had little ultraviolet glasses on, sitting on Mars at nighttime, you would see the sky glowing. And it would actually be quite amazing. And so these were discovered about a year ago, so about the week before Christmas, so they were called the Christmas lights because these were aurora observed at Mars just before Christmas. And in general, you have what we call night glow, which is just chemistry, chemical reaction, sometimes light produced from that. And it's very similar to what's in the day side called day glow, which is, again, just chemical reaction. It's a very well-known spectrum of emission, mostly from things like carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, some nitrogen oxide, even oxygen. And so the spectrum that was seen from IEVS was very similar, but instead of being very localized, it was spread over almost the entire northern hemisphere. And so we think this comes from energetic electrons from the sun impacting the upper atmosphere of Mars in the northern hemisphere and just causing the atmosphere to glow. Like a neon light, but it's really big, almost planet size rather than just a little glass tube. And so that was the first time that was ever seen at Mars. So again, very exciting new discoveries. Oh boy. So IUVS also discovered a very tenuous atmosphere around Mars, extremely high altitude. And this very tenuous atmosphere is actually far enough away and energetic enough that it's actually leaving Mars, escaping Mars. This is part of the escape of Mars' atmosphere.
Well, this is slide 12?
That's right, slide 12. Yep. Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And so on the left side, we see emission from carbon. In the middle, we see emission from oxygen, and on the right side, we see emission from hydrogen. So all at a different wavelength, but IUVS considers different wavelengths. And so we can see these very diffuse clouds around Mars, particularly in the oxygen and in the hydrogen on the far right. And so these are the very extended atmospheres, and we can actually see the atmosphere of Mars as it escapes space. So we're watching Mars' atmosphere disappear, float away in these images, which is also very exciting. So it's the first time it had been seen in the carbon atmosphere and the oxygen atmosphere escaping from Mars. We'd actually seen some of the hydrogen from the Hubble Space Telescope looking at Mars. You could see that extended atmosphere around there, but it's the first time we'd seen the oxygen carbon. Is also very exciting. However, the next slide, slide 13, things didn't look like they looked before, and it didn't look like how they were predicted. So we tried to model, particularly the hydrogen atmosphere on Mars, is hydrogen escaping from Mars, and it's been observed with Hubble, and so we built models of what this should look like. And so on the left is the actual data. In the middle is the model. It looked pretty similar. But with a very fine eye, you can see some differences. And so on the right, you take the difference between the two. And some places, this model we had over predicts how much hydrogen is there, and in some cases it under predicts the hydrogen there. So the data isn't quite matching the model, which is actually kind of exciting. That tells us we don't understand everything, and so there's more stuff to learn. And so that tells us, well, that the hydrogen escaping from Mars is more complicated than we thought. And so, well, let's keep studying this problem. And so this is the first time that there is this discrepancy between the model and data was observed, and so that leads us to, let's keep investigating this problem and see if we can figure out the discrepancy. Why don't our ideas about this hydrogen atmosphere agree with the data that we see? So let's see, slide 14. Everything we've talked about so far, well, mostly the last few slides, have been neutral gas, so neutral carbon, neutral oxygen, neutral hydrogen escaping from Mars, just floating away, genes escape, if we go back to whatever that slide 4 or 5 or something. But we can also look at the ions. We can see the ions escape. And so we can look at how the ions move. So static, again, is an instrument that looks at the ions, the composition and the energy. We can see the direction that the ions are moving away from Mars. And so we see ions, well, they move all over the place. But in the picture on slide 14, imagine the sun is way off to the right. And then the solar wind moving from right to left. And so there's a leftward pointing arrow. It's a tailward escape. So that's where the solar wind can grab on to some of the ions in Mars' atmosphere and just pull them away from Mars. There's also this interesting bit that's pointing upward, the plume, the red arrow. And that's a very interesting sort of different channel for escape. Because the velocity of the solar wind is to the left. But look at the electric field that's in the solar wind. It's pointing upwards in this particular case. And so if you have ions that form near Mars, what they do is they feel an electric field pointing up. Because you can think of that electric field sort of sucking the ions away from Mars and sucking them upward direction rather than to the left. And that creates what we call this polar plume. So ions being pulled upward, sucked upward away from Mars. Slide 15 shows a simulation. So this isn't actually data. This is a combination of data and simulation. So looking at the direction in which the ions are actually going. And so again, the sun is on the right. The solar wind moves toward the left. And so if you look on the left side of the circle that represents Mars, you see some red squares. So that's ions that are being pulled by the solar winds to the left. But then above the circle, so at the top part of the plot on slide 15, we also see a bunch of red boxes and arrows that are pointing up. And so, again, these are ions being sucked out by the electric field in the solar wind, not just by the magnetic field and velocity, but the electric field. So it's multiple ways the solar wind can suck ions away from the atmosphere of Mars. And then we can see, so again, because static is able to measure not only composition, but also energy, we can see as these ions get sucked out by electric fields, the further away they travel from Mars, the more energetic they get, because they get energy from the electric field. And so in slide 16, we have a plot from static that has an altitude of 250 kilometers above the surface. And so we see things like atomic and molecular hydrogen ions, as well as helium and atomic and molecular oxygen ions. So they're all separated by mass. And in this case, they're fairly low energy, a couple eV, that's not very energetic. in most cases. We jump to slide 17. This is at 500 kilometers, so twice as far from the surface, but everything shifts to the right. I mean, everything has a higher energy. So it's being sucked out by the electric field. They're getting more and more energy as they get energy from the electric field. And so they have plenty of energy to escape from the gravity of Mars in this case. Once they get to a couple hundred, 500 kilometers, then they're gone. They just keep on moving out into space. Okay. Oh, slide 18. So what we want to do, I guess one of the ultimate goals of MAVEN is to calculate how much stuff is escaping from Mars, how much atmosphere is leaving Mars. So to do that, we need to look over basically the entire planet, average everything together. So that's what we try to do here in slide 18. And so we have MAVEN been orbiting Mars for about a year, so it's covered a lot in terms of latitude and longitude. And so that the bottom left plot shows the coverage in again, latitude and longitude. Not that great. But actually, if you look on the bottom right plot, we change our coordinate system. So what's really important that we've learned so far is that if we want to look at how much stuff is escaping, we need to look in not the geographic coordinates of Mars, but the solar wind coordinates. So what direction is the solar wind flowing, and what direction is the magnetic field and the electric field in the solar wind? And that's what the bottom right plot tries to show. So what we would call MSE, that's it's a coordinate system that's based on the planetary body of Mars, but also the electric field that's in the solar winds. And so that basically changes a lot as the direction of the sun's magnetic field changes a lot. But what happens is it actually spreads out the coverage. We actually see a lot more of Mars if we're put in that coordinate system, if we're just put in geographic coordinates. It actually helps us a lot. So we can, based on that coverage in the bottom right plot on slide 18, we can start to bend our observations. So slide 19 is really one of the key ones, slide 19 and 20, those are the 19 first. So looking at how much stuff is leaving Mars. So upper left is the escaping flux. So how many particles per second are leaving Mars. And here we're looking in this coordinate system that's organized by the sun's electric field. But when we look at the direction things are going, not everything is leaving Mars. Some things are actually coming back toward Mars. So the upper right, shows return flux. So these are ions that are coming back toward Mars. So the stuff that's leaving is in blue, the stuff that's coming back is in red. And so the bottom left sort of puts the two together with the net. So take the red plus the blue. And so some places, so if you look at the bottom right plot on slide 19, there's a red patch. So that's where most stuff is returning toward Mars. But there's also a lot of blue area, and the blue is where ions are leaving Mars. And so if you add all that together, there's a net escape, so a net loss of ions from Mars. And that turns out to be about 100 grams per second, at least based on these very average measurements. So that's an average picture. That changes with time. Both short time scales and very long time scales over the life of Mars, but also on shorter time scales with the solar wind changing. Let's see. And then slide 20 tries to show that on a picture of Mars. So looking at what's escaping. And so anywhere you see blue squares, that's where things are leaving Mars. And so on the day side, so imagine on the left-hand side of the slide 20, imagine you're the sun looking at Mars. Not a lot of things are escaping. There's some, the whitish things are near zero, where you can see Mars' surface, you have a net flow toward Mars. But if you look at the right side, the night side of Mars, you see a lot of blue squares. That's where things are actively leaving Mars. And again, if you add it all up, about 100 grams per second, which doesn't seem like a lot, but there's a lot of seconds in a year. There's a lot of seconds in 4.6 billion years. That's a lot of material that's leaving Mars. Let's see. If we want to look at time variability, we can go to slide 21, and we see how the sun changes over time. So the very top row in slide 21 is looking at how the EUV, the extreme ultraviolet, from the sun changes. And so when you have a solar flare, there's a big spike in the amount of extreme ultraviolet. So normally it's pretty low baseline, and then you have spikes and you have a solar flare. Also, associated with solar flares, you often have what we call solar energetic particles, SEPs. And so these are typically electrons and ions that are energized at the time the solar flare occurs. These things are extremely energetic and move out at almost speed of light, a little bit slower, but because they're not photons, but pretty darn fast. And so that's the second panel we see there, is when we see the solar energetic particles. The third panel is from the SWIA, has a solar wind ion analyzer. It's just the normal solar wind analyzing, looking at what the normal solar wind does. But after this is solar flare and solar energetic particles, oftentimes there is a shock wave that accompanies that and energizes and pushes ahead the solar wind. And so you get enhanced solar wind also associated with solar flares. And in the bottom panel is the magnetic field, B total, so the total magnitude of the magnetic field. And so we can see that changes as MAVEN orbits a planet. And so you see spikes all the time, but those are when MAVEN gets close to a planet. If you look at the lower levels, that's how the solar wind changes, the magnetic field of the solar wind. You'll see that also increases typically after a solar flare. After the energetic particles come through, then you have the enhancement in the regular normal solar wind, and also enhancement in the magnetic field, the interplanetary magnetic field. And so March of this year, there were several solar events, solar flares accompanied by energetic particles and accompanied by shocks. And so these were seen from Earth and also from solar orbiting spacecraft. So we have multiple points of multiple observation points for these events. And so we want to see, how does this impact the atmosphere? So the slide 22, we find that, once the solar flare occurs and once the energetic particles come through, then we have an increase often in the solar wind density, solar wind velocity. There's a shock that's pushing the normal solar wind ahead of it. And so we see an increase in the dynamic pressure. That's just the density times the velocity squared, the kinetic energy, basically the solar wind. And so you see a big increase in that there in late March. As seen in the bottom panel of slide 22. Let's see, slide 23, we can see how that affects the ions around Mars. And so on the left, we have the circle is Mars. We have two other curves. One is the boundary between the solar winds and Mars. So the outermost boundaries we'll call the bow shock. Solar wind is supersonic. It hits Mars, this obstacle slows down, so the shock wave that's produced. And then inside the shock wave, before you get to Mars, there's another boundary, the induced magnetosphere boundary. So that's basically where the shock solar wind is diverted around Mars. And so you have your undisturbed solar wind, your shock solar wind, and then you're basically the part that's dominated by the planet. That's inside the magnetosphere boundary. And on the right, we see a comparison of low dynamic pressure at the top and high dynamic pressure at the bottom. So these are really small pressures, so nanopascals, so a pascal is a newton per meter squared. So 1/1,000,000,000 of that is the pressure of the solar wind. So not very much, but it's noticeable, and we see changes in those boundaries. The boundaries move in and out. You can see in the top right, The darker colors extend farther to the right. In the bottom right, the darker colors are well within the dotted line, these nominal Bauschacht boundary and the Hudesberg boundary. And so that's a change that's seen as this enhanced solar wind comes by, this enhanced pressure. Let's see. Oh, also slide 24, again, one of my favorites, aurora. So if we look at slide 24, you see the Christmas lights around orbit 400, that's how many times may have gone around Mars, back from December of last year. And then around orbit 800, we have the from March of this year. And so what we're plotting here on the vertical axis is just the intensity of the light emitted from the upper atmosphere of Mars. And so we see both the Christmas aurora event had very high intensity light emitted from that sphere. And similarly, in March, we had just as bright light being emitted. Now, there's fewer orbits. It didn't last as long, so there's fewer plus signs, but they get just as bright as it was before in December. So, again, as this enhanced solar wind came by Mars and the solar flare and energetic particles, it again made Mars' atmosphere glow. Aurora. Let's see, slide 25. We also noticed that the amount of ions leaving Mars increased as this event passed Mars. So the black curves are just the average over the entire year of the flux leaving Mars as a function of where you are around Mars, the solar zenith angle. Zero solar zenith angle means you're right at the equator. 180 degrees solar zenith angle means you're right at midnight. And 90 degrees solar zenith angle means you're the terminator, so right when you're going from day to night. And so if we look at the black curves, so that's a year's worth of data, we see some variation with solar zenith angle. But what's important is to look at the red dots, which occurred in March as this enhanced solar wind came by. Well, those red dots go a lot higher on the vertical axis than the black lines do. So that means the amount of ions escaping from Mars has increased as this event hit Mars. And so it increased in the escape rate. But during these solar storms, during the solar activity, when these events pass Mars, the amount of atmosphere escaping from Mars increases. So that's what we expect, but now we have the concrete observational evidence that tells us how much it increases. That's important if we want to go back in time and say, well, how much atmosphere is lost if we assume we had solar events that occur, you know, every couple of years or every couple of weeks or whatever. How much do we expect the atmospheric loss to increase as well? Okay, slide 26. This is the last result slide. This is looking at what we call sputtering. So sputtering is an interesting case. This is where you have ions from the solar wind hitting the neutral atmosphere of Mars. And in that collision, the neutral atmosphere, atmospheric particle has enough energy to escape the gravity of Mars. So it's the ions giving the neutrals a kick, and a big enough kick, those neutrals can escape. And so those are sputtered neutrals. And so if you increase the number of ions coming by Mars, as you do when you have these solar events coming by, you will increase the number of the rate, I guess, of sputtering, the amount of atmosphere is kicked off. And so slide 26, if you look at especially the right-hand plot, there's estimates on, you know, how these rates have changed over time. But in particular, I want you to notice one that says sputtered O and sputtered CO2. So we see those two curves. They're very high, you know, early in Mars' history when Mars is only a billion years old. And they're a lot lower now when Mars is about 4.5 billion years old. But the red dot that's just above where where both curves end at 4.5 is the amount of sputtering that was determined from this event that came by Mars in March, so the solar event. And so, again, we see that when the solar activity, this enhanced solar wind comes by Mars, it increases the amount of sputtering, and that increases the atmospheric loss. So by multiple processes, all the processes by which you can lose atmosphere, it appears all of them are enhanced when you have this increased solar wind coming by, which means atmospheric loss through all these different channels is increased when you have the enhanced solar wind. And so what we really want to do is nail down by how much is the increase for each individual channel. And then once we know how each individual process behaves currently, then we extrapolate back in time and say, well, how does each individual process change to go back in time? Because if we go back in time a couple billion years, we know the sun was different. If we look at other stars like the sun, but younger, we can see things like the number of solar flares increases, so there's enhanced extreme ultraviolet output from young stars. It also appears that the number of solar flares, the occurrence of solar flares, also increases as you go back in time. So young stars are more active than older stars. Like kids are more active than middle-aged people. You know, they have more tantrums. Young stars have more tantrums than old stars do. And so we see how these different escape processes change as solar activity changes, and they go back in time to, then what was the total cumulative escape rate, escape of atmosphere from Mars over time. So a final slide 17, just a status and summary. MAVEN's doing great. So it's been there for a year. All of the instruments are still working just as well as they did when we got there. So that's great. There's been a whole bunch of papers published very recently. There was a series of papers published in the journal Science, and about 40 or 50 more that were published in GRL, Geophysical Research Letters. All the MAVEN data has been released to the public. So there's the planetary data system, which is where how the public can access planetary data. And so it's all been released there, so anyone can go look at it and do whatever they want with it. The good news is, the mission's been approved for an extended mission, and so it's going to be for another 8 months. So the initial mission was for 1 year. That's done. So we have an extended mission for another 8 months. And then we're also preparing for the second extended mission. So that's to write a proposal, submit to NASA. They look at all the planetary missions and decide, how much money do we have? What missions can we fund? And so we're in the process now of preparing that, what we'll call senior review. So and keep the mission going even longer. So as long as everything works, it just makes sense, in our opinion, to keep the mission operating and take as much data as we can. So in January or early February, we'll submit that, and we'll hear back from NASA in a few months and find out if that's been approved so we can operate for even another year. So what was once a one-year mission will be hopefully a 3 or 4 year or even more mission to accumulate as much data as we can about how Mars is moving its atmosphere and what that implies for Mars' early history for water and ultimately, we think, for life and habitability, what Mars was like way back at the beginning of the solar system. So that's all I have for now as far as the presentation goes. I hope I didn't bore you too much.
Cool. Thank you so much. And we actually are very short on time right now, so we will not be having a Q&A, at least right now. But, Matt, would it be okay if people emailed me questions and I could submit them to you? We can write up in a follow-up newsletter or something?
Oh, absolutely. And actually, I would probably get better answers if I had time to think about them and write them up.
Excellent. Very cool. So stay tuned. And also, though we do not have a Q&A, we will be having our prize. Jennifer, our wonderful operator, will tell folks how to queue up. It'll be the lucky, seventh person. And I'm also for a prize, which will be the Astronomical Society's Star Watching Kit. And I'm also throwing in a few extra stickers and goodies from the AGU that I have in my bag, including a NASA science calendar for 2016. So, Jennifer, if you can tell folks how to queue up.
Thank you. If you would like to queue up to win a chance to win the prize, press *1, and the seventh caller, I will open your line. Again, press *1 to queue up for the prize.
And can I just say the NASA calendars are very popular. People line up for not quite miles, but a long way to wait for those NASA calendars.
Oh yeah, it was kind of funny. I walked by and I just got one. I'm like, oh sweet, and all this like really new images and data from all the new missions. I'm like, this is awesome.
Yes, indeed.
Cool.
All right, are we ready for our prize winner?
We are ready.
All right, Faith Thompson, you are our prize winner. Your line is open.
Awesome. Oh, thank you. Great. That's super. Cool. I enjoyed the program tonight.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cool. And we will be getting you those goodies to you very soon.
Super. I look forward and to the next telecon.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Faith. Cool. Alrighty. Well, that is it for tonight's telecon. Thanks again to Matt, who is about to run off to yet another AGU meeting. So good luck.
That's right.
Matt.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Fillingham. And we will be... So anyway... you can find this telecon along with many others on the Night Sky Network under our Astronomy Activities category. Just look for telecon. And tonight's presentation with full audio and a written transcript along with follow-ups to your questions answered by Matt post-AGU Madness will be posted by the end of this week. So send your questions again to nightskyinfo@astrosociety.org and we'll get some excellent answers for you. So good night, everyone, and keep looking up.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.